real challenge to summarize 7 years of research finding in 15 minutes. Next speaker is Dr. Weintraub from Can Do Center. Let me just bring the slides for you. Okay, you have it.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon. It's a real pleasure to be here to talk to you about our Can Do Center at the University of California, San Francisco, our Center to Address Disparities in Children's Oral Health. I've been in California for a long time, but I am a New Yorker. If you want me to talk fast, I can. Just take care of some of the time. But I don't have any relationship to disclose, but I also will include discussion of the off-label use of fluoride varnish as a caries preventive agent. The mission of our CanDo Center is to reduce oral health disparities through early intervention and prevention with children and their caregivers. In case anyone just came into the room, this is the disease we're talking about. Very painful for young children, difficult and expensive to treat with, we've heard about all the associated psychological problems and so forth. So when we first started our center, we had data from a statewide California oral health needs assessment that showed the prevalence of early childhood caries in California was 14% among all preschool children. But the prevalence among preschool children from low-income families enrolled in Head Start was much higher. It was 44% among Asian children and 39% among Latino children. And in a study that Dr. Ramos Gomez conducted pretty close to where we are now, the prevalence was 58%. And as you know, just makes your heart to see children with this terrible affliction. So we started our CanDo Center in 2001. The CanDo is an acronym, well, not really an acronym, it's a nickname for our center, but we liked it. We started out with four main projects, our cores and pilot projects. And then in 2005, after an extensive strategic planning process, we added on four more projects. So we ended up with eight main projects. We have a very multidisciplinary team. We involved 43 investigators across departments and schools. About a third of our investigators were new to oral health research, and about three quarters were women or minority investigators. We involved over 125 trainees, from pre-dental student to PhD, postdocs. We had two diversity supplements funded by NIDCR and over 3,000 study participants. Our studies are mainly in Northern California and the greater San Francisco Bay Area, but also in the Central Valley in Mendota, in a rural area with farm worker families, and down here in San Diego and San Ysidro at the California-Mexico border. We involved a lot of different study populations, primarily low-income Hispanic families, but some studies also included Chinese, Filipino, and African-American families, a lot of preschool children, of course a lot of parents and caregivers, pregnant women, agricultural worker families, and even dentists. Our study designs included two randomized clinical trials, several cross-sectional studies, one was population-based, two qualitative studies, one statistical data mining analysis. Our data sources included interviews, focus groups, dental exams, and in some studies, buccal swabs and salivary assays. So I'm going to share with you some of our key findings and advances organized by first talking about how we were increasing our understanding of early childhood caries, then preventing early childhood caries and providing evidence for health policies. In terms of understanding early childhood caries, we made advances in terms of methodology. We found that randomized clinical trials can be conducted successfully in community settings, but it's important to pay attention to cultural issues and ethnicity for retention of study participants, and Dr. Ramos Gomez will talk about that in the next session. Some of our colleagues developed a valid, reliable, and culturally appropriate instrument for low-literacy Hispanic caregivers to assess the acceptability of different caries preventive treatments. And not only will this instrument be helpful for research purposes, but we think it'll be a useful tool for program planning. My colleague Dr. Gansky, who's in charge of our measurement and evaluation core, extended statistical methods and developed software for estimating health disparities from complex sample surveys to apply the National Center for Health Statistics guidelines on analyzing and studying health disparities. And he's also developed knowledge discovery and dental data mining tools to improve the performance of statistical models. And for those who are interested, the software is available on our website. Also, a related project, we developed a conceptual model for children's oral health, which was published in Pediatrics, emphasizing the importance of not only our traditional intraoral factors of caries, not working too well, but also you can see child-level, family-level, and community-level factors that are very important in a greater environment and changing over time. Some of our studies looked at the epidemiology of oral conditions in these young children and their families, in addition to the obvious high unmet treatment need in the children. We also found a lot of high needs in adults. In the study of pregnant Hispanic women at the U.S.-Mexican border, 93% of these Mexican women, Mexican or Mexican-American women, had untreated caries with a mean number of 10 decayed surfaces. About half reported very poor oral health, and about a quarter had toothache or dental pain. And in our Hispanic farm worker families, about half had untreated caries, 76%, very poor oral health, and about a quarter with toothache or dental pain. These are among the adults. Dr. Gansey has helped us understand determinants of health disparities, finding that contextual measures significantly relate to early childhood caries, showing that preschool Head Start data by race ethnicity interaction shows preschool characteristics modify racial ethnic disparities. Several of our qualitative studies focused on caregiver beliefs, so we could better design our educational and health promotion messages. We found similar misunderstandings across all focus groups with various race ethnicities, U.S. born, non-U.S. born, different ages. The caregivers really do not recognize the importance of baby teeth. We did find cultural and generational differences in beliefs and attitudes about dental care, especially preventive practices. Caries etiology is often misunderstood. Not all realize that juice, soda, or nighttime bottle feeding with milk were bad for teeth, especially among non-U.S. born caregivers. Some thought that the bottle's nipple rather than its fluid content was damaging to teeth. They knew there was something wrong with the bottle, but they didn't quite get what it was. And of course, they're not aware that dental caries is an infectious bacterial disease. They did understand that candy and sweet foods, though, were bad for teeth, which is, you know, with Halloween coming up, we kind of keep that in mind. There are a lot of misconceptions about when to bring the child to a dentist. Parents reported taking a child for dental care when the children complain of pain, when there's a noticeable problem, the teeth are described as being dark in color and already damaged. When they notice tooth discolorations or stains, that was interpreted as a need to bring their child to a dentist for a dental cleaning, and they'd be really surprised when the dentist said that their child had a lot of cavities. We also identified some favorable contexts to promote a child dental visit. Recommendations from a pediatrician, a family doctor, or a WIC, a school requirement, or an older sibling already going to a dentist helped to prompt a dental visit. However, many of these circumstances lead to a dental visit at an older age than we think is desirable. In our focus groups, a lot of parents reported dental fear, and that had an effect on dental utilization. They talked about their own negative experiences as a child going to a dentist, and their dental fear could act one of two different ways. Either it made them avoid dental care for their child because they didn't want their child to have the same bad dental experience that they had, or it was a motivation to really seek out what they would consider a good dentist so their child would have a favorable dental experience. There were a lot of misunderstandings about toothbrushing. Many parents reported the time to start brushing their child's teeth was when the child had all his or her teeth, who were starting to eat adult food. And although they report supervising toothbrushing, to them supervising means reminding their children to brush their teeth, not what many of us would consider supervision. In urban and rural areas, instead of tap water, low-income Hispanic populations buy bottled or filtered water, which is unlikely to have an optimal fluoride level. We found there's a lot of safety concerns and cultural beliefs that impact the source of drinking water, both in rural and urban populations, including San Francisco. With regard to access to dental care, children with public dental insurance, there was a scarcity of dentists to treat them. These children are more likely to be referred for care, resulting in long delays for needed treatment. And these long treatment delays, when these kids already have toothaches, can result in lack of self-esteem and stigmatization. There were few dentists that had received training in treating young children or had behavioral or pharmaceutical techniques available to treat children who were uncooperative or had special or severe needs. And a lot of dentists were restricting their practice to children older than age 5. Reimbursement policies also affected dental care. Reimbursement mechanisms at rural federally qualified health centers by the patient visit rather than procedure seem to encourage multiple visits and parental hardship. The California Medicaid program requires radiographic evidence that a carious lesion breaches the dental enamel junction, evidence that's often difficult to obtain on young or an uncooperative child. So then we get to, let's do something about this. Let's prevent early childhood caries. Before we moved ahead with dissemination efforts, we decided, let's see. We have all these caries preventive methods available now. Which ones are most preferred by low literacy Hispanic families? So we tested the method on the instrument I mentioned earlier for 5 methods. For the child, toothbrushing with fluoride toothpaste, xylitol in food, or fluoride varnish. For the parent, chlorhexidine mouth rinse or xylitol gum. And we found that all 5 measures were acceptable, but the fluoride varnish and toothbrushing with fluoride toothpaste were the most preferred treatments by these Hispanic families. And then we had our fluoride varnish randomized clinical trial, which showed that fluoride varnish added to caregiver counseling is efficacious in reducing early childhood caries incidence in young children. As you can see from the graph, we had a nice dose response effect for our 3 groups. One group got counseling only, one group, the parents got counseling, and fluoride varnish was assigned once a year, and the third group got fluoride varnish twice a year. The odds of children developing caries were 4 times higher in the counseling only group compared to the group assigned to fluoride varnish twice a year, and 2 times higher in the counseling only group compared to the group assigned to fluoride varnish once a year. This efficacy of fluoride varnish in preventing early childhood caries provides an additional rationale for a preventive dental visit for young children, because we can do something at that visit that's important. The evidence from this study was highly rated in these 2 evidence-based journals. We have another clinical trial that's currently in progress. The data collection will be completed shortly. That's testing the combined efficacy of maternal oral health counseling beginning during pregnancy, maternal chlorhexidine mouth rinse regimen, and fluoride varnish for children starting at age 1 to prevent early childhood caries. And Dr. Ramos Gomez is the PI in that, and we have Rocio Berentin here, who's our project director. Thanks so much. So these studies have provided evidence for fluoride varnish policies and clinical guidelines. Dr. Gansky got funding from the California Program on Access to Care that led to a fluoride varnish policy brief for legislators and public health clinics and policymakers. This policy brief was distributed to all federally qualified health centers in California, of which there are over 1,000. Now, Dean Featherstone was on the committee that was developing the American Dental Association clinical guidelines for professionally applied topical fluoride. So we have the fluoride varnish recommendation in those guidelines now. And the American Association of Public Health Dentistry fluoride varnish policy for caries prevention. We were also very happy that the California Medicaid program now includes as a fluoride varnish benefit for children less than 6 years old, benefit up to 3 times a year, and that physicians, nurses, and medical personnel are now legally permitted to apply fluoride varnish when the attending physician develops the procedure and establishes the protocol. So that's really helpful. We've been able to get leveraging and additional funding from NIH and a few other sources over this time period for R21s and RR3s and other projects. And then just recently, we received funding for the next 7 years for dissemination research and two clinical trials to prevent and reduce caries in high-risk children. The PIs of those projects are Peggy Walsh and Francisco Ramos Gomez. We've got our core, our expanded data coordinating center, directed by Dr. Gansky, and as mentioned, we'll be working with Boston University and the University of Colorado, Denver, and a lot of partners that will be working with us for the two clinical trials. So in summary, we're now focused on disseminating findings, expanding research capacity, collaborating with existing and new partners, seeking new funds and leveraging, synergistic interactions across projects, and seeing study outcomes having an effect on clinical practice and health policy. I'd like to remember two of our colleagues who passed away during this time period, Umo Isong and Pat Evans, who made substantial contribution to our work. Our goal is to improve the oral health of children. I picked the same quote that Dushyant showed earlier, which I think is a nice one. For additional information, please view our website, ucsf.edu/cando. I want to say that we have a lot more CanDo presentations coming up at this meeting, one this afternoon, three tomorrow morning, and one on Wednesday morning. So here's my quick advertisement. Visit our other CanDo members' presentations. And then I want to thank all the families who participated and the many, many colleagues at UCSF and our partnering institution and agencies who make all this work possible. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much.